I have a most interesting subject to discuss with you this morning. This is Jimmy Finister of our Lord and Savior.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fundamentalists Podcast. My name is Elliot Morgan. I'm a comedian. I do stand-up. I do internet things as well. I'm part of a comedy collective called The Valley Folk. I decided it would be a great idea to chat with my good friend and roommate, Dr. Peter Rollins. We decided to start a podcast together. And Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Was that an okay intro? Man, that was like...
Can I give it a try?
Yes, please.
Because you're a pro intro person.
I don't know what that was, but okay, yeah. Okay, give it a go.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of The Fundamentalists with Elliot C. Morgan and Peter J. Rollins.
J, what's the J?
Jesus.
Of course.
Yeah,
thank
what's
you.
The C for?
Christ.
Oh, well, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And it's crazy how that worked out.
That's a sign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how would you judge that intro?
I thought it was great. I really liked it. Yeah. I thought it was better than mine. For sure. I was trying to imagine the theme song that we have because we talked about this in one episode, but we did the first episode and I hadn't heard the intro music yet. And so the intro music is this very kind of ambient, electronic, cool beat. And then it's my voice being like, hey, everybody, welcome back to the Fundamentalist Podcast. And it's very...
We've talked
cheesy.
About this, that the logo is very you, mm-hmm. and the music is more my style.
Right.
And so there's this clash of styles.
Right.
I go for very somber and serious.
Yes.
And you go for very kind of comedic and cool.
Yeah. And my brother designed that, our artwork, David Morgan. So he does a thing. I'll shout at him out because he's visiting right now, which we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Oh, that's crazy. I thought you had two brothers and one brother was the designer and the other brother was the computer guy.
Oh, really?
But they're one and the same.
Yes, like the Trinity.
Wow.
Like Jesus and at least the Holy Spirit. Yeah. So this whole time you thought I had another brother?
Yeah.
That's so really funny. Just him.
Oh, and I haven't mentioned to him. I never said anything about the logo because I thought it wasn't
probably
it.
Thinks you
so
hate
he probably
it.
Thinks I hate it. Oh, this is so embarrassing.
That's hilarious. Oh. He just texted me because we went out last night. We went to the comedy store and we went to this cigar lounge and that was really fun. You were there. We hung out.
Yeah, that was great.
You and me and David and Buddy Delman and Mike, and we were all having a jolly time. Your buddy Seth came out. Seth, am I just?
Yeah, Seth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was all a good time. But he texted me and he was like, I had such a good time. I was like, I really need it. I was like, yeah, man, thanks. I had a good time too. Which is a nice feeling when you have family in town and they seem to be having a good time.
That's good. But he must be wondering why, I've never mentioned it once. It's going oh, obviously Pete hates it.
I think it's never occurred to him.
Yeah.
I bet it's never. Maybe it has.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Because we did talk pretty extensively about this podcast because we were talking about just talking freely about, religion and all that stuff and philosophy is, we were on that discussion. So naturally this came up. So I'm sure, yeah, he probably he's going to lose a lot of sleep over it.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll thank him today over the roast.
Sure. That's good. Over the roast. Yeah. So we'll paint a picture for you, everybody. This is, we just opened a door and we have fresh air coming in from North Hollywood, Los Angeles,
Would
California.
Would you call it
fresh? We have air coming in.
Yeah.
We have air in quotes coming in.
Yes.
And we have some candles lit and we're drinking wine from trywink.com/fundamentalists, which we'll talk about at the half hour mark because we're trying to be professional podcasters.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not sure if we're doing a good job yet.
No, God, no, dude. Not. We are not doing a good job. So do you want to tell everybody about today's episode?
Yeah. So today we are going to talk a little bit about the theme of be careful what you wish for. It's something that we've talked about a little bit in the last few days, so we thought it would be a good topic to kind of delve into.
Yeah, so I think I got a number of things to chat about here, but do you remember when I was I think 17, 18, my plan for the future, my wish for the future was to just get into the University of Florida and then get a degree and then, you know, I'd be married and then get a house by like 27. And I had the neighborhood of the house that I wanted and I had the blueprint of the house that I wanted. And I would look at pictures of the house that had been built before and I would, you know, imagine living there. And then I was like, I want that by like 35. But then I was like, I have a starter house. It's near my parents. And that'll be when I get like 27. And then my wife and I'll have a kid at like 29 or something. And that was my whole plan.
Wow.
And I remember one time telling this guy who was like the, I don't know, some kind of like youth pastor or something, but he was like, oh, you got it all figured out, huh? And he was like, all right, let's see how it pans out. And I remember being so like indignant and being like, no, for sure, this is the exact path it's going to take. And obviously there are some left turns in there. And now I couldn't have a more different life, but it's that's not exactly what we're talking about though, is it? That's,
yeah.
Because that's not wish fulfillment. That's just growing up and your plans changing. Crap, let's start the podcast over. Okay. This
I thought you were serious for a second.
Yeah, no.
That would take way too much work.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I can't remember my early wishes. I actually can't remember much.
Me
from
neither.
The past. I'm rubbish. No, but then I talked to a friend, he's a psychoanalyst, and he says, usually when you can't remember anything, it's like terrible. And I was like, oh no, I'm sure it's fine that I can't remember anything, but I cry every night.
So wait, a psychoanalyst told you something that you were fine about, you actually felt you should feel horrible about?
I should feel horrible about it.
That's a shocker.
I can't remember anything really from my past, even the teenage years. And he's like, well, I would say that's going to come back to haunt you. But
I think
I just don't care enough.
I don't care enough. Yeah.
Because when I really think about it, I can't think of things, but my life bores me. I mean, it's going to bore everybody else.
Does your life bore you?
Well, no, but just the kind of the mundane
story
bit of it.
Yeah. I hate that crap, man. I felt myself, I think it happened last night when like we were all getting to know each other and it was that thing where it's like, somebody was asking me about me and then there was just sort of this low energy all of a sudden in the room where it was just sort of like, I guess we have to do the thing where we get to know each other. And it's like, where are you from? And how's your grocery store? What you do? And blah, blah, blah. And I remember, but it wasn't just me. It was also like, I heard Delman and Mike kind of do it where it was just sort of this, it wasn't anything bad, but it was like, no one wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, nobody wanted to say.
We were just really, here's the bullet points. Like, you know, let's get back to smoking the cigar and feeling manly or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's a fun thing.
Yeah. I've noticed in LA, people don't generally like to talk about what they do anyway. I mean, a lot of it's aspirational. Like if you ask somebody, they say, I'm an actor. But then if you ask what they do, they work in say a coffee shop or whatever. So there's a weird thing where people are also trying to construct their identities, but that's kind of the opposite. That's where you kind of like try to big yourself up.
There's a lot of like speaking and like intention stuff with that too, where it's like, I remember
you visualize,
yeah,
you materialize. Like,
I used to do that. When I first moved out here, I remember one of the first times I was talking to, getting to know a guy who's a good friend of mine named Curtis, you know, Curtis. And it was like one of the first times we'd had a conversation and it was some Bible study. And he was like, what do you do? And I was like, I'm an actor. But of course I wasn't an actor. Yeah. I was a veterinary technician, but I still had to like, I felt like I needed to say it. And I was absolutely doing that, like constructing my identity thing. But then, if you talk to somebody who actually does things, they're just sort of like, so, you know, it's this. It's also like we're unwinding and not really wanting to think about all that stuff. So maybe that's part of it too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have a definite lack of nostalgia and it. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's a guy thing, but like, I know that like in the past in relationships, people have been very kind of that I've been with have been very nostalgic and it just doesn't, it's like that part of my brain just isn't there. I mean, I have some nostalgia, but it's not like, it's always like being a kid at Christmas and not like maybe in my college years or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, for some people, and it's a very common thing, but you know, think of the best years as behind them. And it could be just in childhood, you know, there's an idealization of childhood and maybe life is difficult. So you tend to, you know, have memories of the past.
Yeah.
And actually, I think as you get older, like probably your memories are going to keep you going. Like there's a guy, a professor, I heard him say, he's like in his 80s. And he says like he spends an evening just thinking about the wonderful parts of his past because he's in his 80s. He's not like, you know, out doing new things, but he sustains himself by the memories of the past. And I suppose that's quite beautiful.
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
I would do, yeah, I was doing for a while these, because I do the meditating sometimes, and I was doing ones where the point was to, like, be grateful for things and be, you know, experience gratitude, because I read all that, like, self-help stuff, and a lot of it is, like, be grateful.
It's funny you're kind of into that. Mm-hmm. That's great.
But a lot of it is, like, it's about that, you know, being grateful, and then the way you're grateful is you have to kind of be somewhat nostalgic and, like, go into the past and be like, reflect on it, and then be like, when you're done, you're like, oh, I'm a little, there they are, there goes that gang.
See, this was your idea to keep the door open. I don't know if it's going to work.
I know. We'll find out.
We'll keep trying.
Yeah. It might be annoying, but I kind of like the ambient sort of, like, it feels, I don't know, it feels more open, not like we're shut off from the world, but if it gets too loud, let us know, everybody, and we'll never do it again.
Yeah.
Ever. But anyway, nostalgia is a weird thing.
Yeah. But wish fulfillment then, the idea of having dreams and all of that. I mean, one of the things I wanted to throw into this, because this is what I was thinking about this subject, and I was thinking about the distinction that some kind of psychoanalysts use between pleasure and enjoyment. Pleasure is, you know, in fulfilling a wish. You want something, even if it's just, say, to see friends, and you go out with friends and you have pleasure. It's a pleasurable thing. You drink some good wine, you have good food, you have a good time. But then enjoyment is the unconscious, and it's the pleasure you get from not having that, from looking forward to it like a holiday. You know, the pleasure, you're kind of thinking, I can't wait till the holiday comes, but you get something out of that, and they call that enjoyment. And so the funny thing is, you can't get pleasure and enjoyment really at the same time, because there's the enjoyment of not having the thing you're looking forward to, and then there's the pleasure of it. But in psychoanalysis, they say that mostly the real satisfaction is in the enjoyment, not the pleasure.
It's like the Christmas morning thing where it's like, Christmas morning, I did it. And then 3 hours later, you're like, oh, man. And like 2 weeks prior, you were like so excited. You were staying up all night. You were like talking, you know, about to your mom and dad about what you were going to ask Santa for. And that was just last year for me. Yeah. That was just December.
Oh, God, jokes. Oh, so funny. Oh, God.
I was writing working on new material, and I was at the Comedy Store last night, and I won't go into it, but basically I was like I'm trying to get back into writing more, and I'm just writing stuff down. And one of the things that my sister-in-law brought up was, like, people with notepads, you know, comedians, so they always have their notepads and they're always writing in their notepads. And I was like, I don't know, like, I'm not gonna carry around a notepad. I was like, I have a phone where I can write things in, and then there's an argument that if you write it down, you, like, it's better or whatever, and it sticks in your head more. I don't know, but anyway, I'm trying to just, like, get back in the mode. And so what I'll do is, like, basically there is this homeless person who approached the bar area, and she was, maybe she wasn't homeless, but she was definitely, like, homeless adjacent, next door to homeless, if such a thing was possible. But then she was, like, looking around very panicked, and she was like, I was kind of keeping an eye on her because she looked like manic. And then she kind of looked around, and she looked like she was looking for somebody, and she was bolting around or jerking her head. And then she just bolted off, like she was, you know, being watched or somebody was coming after her. And I talked about the fact that when somebody is walking with a purpose, like, how creepy that is. And so, but then I was like, there's something there about the difference between, like, some, like, when you're in public, somebody who just looks like they have something to do versus somebody who doesn't. Anyway, that's not really the joke, but I was like, I want to remember that. And so I took my cell phone and I was like, remind me, remind me tomorrow about homeless person walking with a purpose, and completely forgot about it. And then this morning I woke up and my phone just says homeless person walking with a purpose, and I was like, what is going on? And then I was like, oh, right, and that led to me actually trying to figure out where my head was. But anyway, and that's exactly the same thing as the enjoyment versus the pleasure.
Yeah.
One too many motorcycles were shutting the door.
Oh yeah, the door is closing.
My mistake. You were right, Pete.
Yeah. The funny thing about this is, once you kind of get this in your head and you think about, okay, there's the pleasure of opening the Christmas present, and that's fleeting, like really fleeting. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of throw it to one side, or you play with it for a while. But then the enjoyment, once you start thinking of life through that lens, and you start to go, okay, right, So, for example, if you said you had a wish for maybe having a family and a house and a kid, and so you've got that, you know, that wish, but actually the enjoyment is working for it, to try to find the right person, to find the right house, to, you know, all of the work. So whenever someone says wants a new house, they think that they'll be so happy when they get the house. But actually, maybe what they love is going around looking at houses, mm-hmm. and looking through the magazines and looking on the internet. And then once they get the house, they're like bored. Mm-hmm. They get what they want, but they no longer want it.
So then they want the next thing, yeah.
Yeah. And the Lacan says this is the difference between the object of desire and the object cause of desire.
Yeah, it took me forever. Because I remember you brought the object of desire and the object cause of desire up one time, and it was like one of the, usually I can follow what you say,
yeah,
but that was one where I was like, this sounds like a bunch of hooey. And then I read some stuff and I was like, I see what you're saying. I hate that terminology though. I think it's confusing and I don't like it, and I'm gonna write a letter.
No, it's a great terminology.
It's
the object
bad.
The object of desire is what you want
the
house,
the object, yeah.
And then the object cause of desire is all of the obstacles that get in the way of you having the car. So it's the not having enough money, having to work hard.
But what's an object cause?
It's
dude.
it's what causes your desire for the object.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why a lot of people have to have they have to have affairs. Affairs are like this, mm-hmm. is that a lot of people, you have I've talked about this before with you and elsewhere, but you take two people, Jack and Jill, and they're been married for 10 years and there's no desire left in the relationship. And then Jack falls in love with Snow White. Mm-hmm. And he's going like, oh, I wish I could be with Snow White, but I can't because I'm married, right? I have kids, I can't do that. But he really wants to be with her. And then Jill finds out, and this is a story I've seen repeated many times
Never
in reality.
Seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jill finds out. So Jack and Jill now are having a massive argument. She says, you're having an affair, get out of the house. He says, yeah, the relationship's over. We haven't really had sex for years. And it's all going to leave. And finally, Jack can be with Snow White. But 9 times out of 10, or very often, you find that as soon as the obstacle to Snow White is removed, as in Jill, the wife, and he can be with Snow White, he'll be like, oh my goodness, I don't want to be with Snow White. That would be the worst thing I want. And actually, I want to be with my partner. And then for Jill, the moment that Jack...
Or they'll at least realize what they were actually wanting, not being like something else was like, the, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you said anything there. You definitely made a couple of words.
Or there's like, he could realize that it doesn't, you know, if Jack gets Snow White and then, you know, just realizes that it wasn't about having Snow White, it could have been about any spectrum of other things.
So he's becoming aware of
whatever the
desire,
true, yeah, not necessarily that it's about, but I know what you're saying, because the model of the relationship is like the affair is like the release valve and like, or whatever. And it's necessary because there's like a TED talk about that, that I remember watching when I was going through my divorce, and it was like, and you might have your Lacan theory, but I got TED
talks. You got TED talks.
So maybe, you know, I'll take it from here, Pete. Yeah. but it was basically about, you know, the idea of the affair essentially being an indicator one way or another of a relationship, and absolutely not being an indicator necessarily of the relationship dying. Like you're saying, like, because it's basically that version, like that option is when the guy goes, oh shit, no, I actually just do want to be with this person.
It could be, but if the guy's an obsessive, so in this example, the woman's an hysteric, the guy's obsessive. So obsessives have real difficulty desiring what they have. So obsessives are always interested in a person who they can't have. So they're always like fancying a friend's partner or whatever. And then hysterics are often people who they can only desire their partner if there's a threat. So there's some other who might steal that partner away. So they suffer from jealousy. And the funny thing is, here's the pleasure enjoyment thing, is they don't take any pleasure from the jealousy, right? But they take incredible amount of enjoyment from it, because that's how they maintain their desire for the partner.
Yeah, it makes it more, puts the fire under it, makes it, raises the stakes.
Yeah, so you'll notice this often, is like some people, they're jealous for no apparent reason, but it seems like they have to be jealous because the jealous keeps the desire jealousy keeps the desire alive. Whereas for an obsessive, it's kind of the opposite. As soon as they get the man or the woman, they lose their interest in them. And so they, in a sense, have to keep making the other person impossible.
Weezer has a song about this, Pete, that sums it up, called Thank God for Girls. It's basically a modern day...
That was my first Weezer song. You played this song to me because we were talking about this.
It's insane that was your first... Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, this is great.
It's amazing. I love that song.
It's a very good song. But it's not very Weezer-y. That's their most poppy.
Yes, so poppy.
Yeah, but I loved it. Yeah.
But yeah, it covers like every type of like... relationship with a woman in some way, like each stanza does, but it's this silly like rappy pop song. It's so fun. But anyway, we had that. I had a joke that fell incredibly flat, which is anomaly, never happens, but we were at the cigar club and we'd gotten our drinks and we were lighting our cigars and we did a little cheers thing, and I just thought it would be funny as a non sequitur, because it was just you and my brother at this point, so it was the three of us, and I just thought it'd be a funny non sequitur to go, I wish I was in love, and then you and David just sort of looked at me sadly, and I was like no, I do wish it, but it's a you know, I'm just we're having fun. but it was one of those things where it was like, I was thinking about how beautiful life is in that moment, because it was so nice. Like, we were all talking about, we're like, this is amazing. I got my brother in town. You're there. We're having a great time. It's a cigar club. It's Beverly Hills. It's all fancy. It's a bunch of, you know, yuppity people around us. And we got these old, worn out chairs, and it just was so cool and such a neat moment. And then I remember thinking like, oh, the only thing that would make this better is if, you know, I was in love. But then I was like, oh, if that's my wish, you know, and be careful what you wish for, then I'm like, of course, that's the most classic one, because me diving into that pool or ocean of like being in love, that sounds terrifying. And I've heard stories about it not ending well.
Oh, yeah. Occasionally, once or twice.
Which is insane, because it seems like such a great thing, but somehow it goes by the wayside more often than it doesn't.
This is an issue that infants have, because there's this idea...
I always like hearing that.
Oh, yeah. Like, this guy Ferenczi...
You're reminding me of a lot of toddlers right now.
What's that?
What you're going through right now is very reminiscent of 3-year-olds.
having tantrums.
Yeah. I was in therapy one time, and I mentioned something about... It was some kind of jealousy thing, and my therapist was just like, how old are you right now? And I was like, I don't know, 16? He was like, I was going to say 8. You're like an 8-year-old who like wants the toy for himself. And I'm like, gosh darn it. And
tough love there.
Yeah. And then I cried. And then, you know, I said, you're right. But anyway, sorry, what were you saying?
So there's three kind of things that are very, very damaging for an infant in this kind of theory. One is that obviously
head trauma. That's right. That's on the list.
That's on the list. Okay, 4. We'll put head trauma
that's
in there.
We can put it at 4.
Severe burns, number 5. Yeah, choking.
Yeah, choking's bad. Choking's bad. They hate that.
Yeah. Well, the other ones are, so, of course, abandonment. You know, you don't have enough connection with your caregivers. But the second is that you have too much, that there is too much love and you're suffocated by the love of your caregivers. It's actually kind of can be even more damaging.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah. The third, which isn't relevant, is if your parents put on a lot of burdens on you so that you feel that you have to, you're carrying their happiness, you're carrying that, you have to kind of be a parent to the parents. But it's the one that we're least aware of is the one actually that over proximity of love is painful and difficult. So sometimes we want to be in love, but if you experience that intensely, it's wonderful for a month or two, but often you have to escape it. That's why a lot of people get married, because you can't stand love. You say vows. It goes like, whether we like each other or not, in sickness and
it's
in health.
It's better than this other stuff.
Yeah, it's better. Like, yeah, we need to escape from the over proximity of love.
Wow, that's going to be a beautiful wedding ceremony. Listen, whether it goes well or not, I'm just exhausted. Yeah. So
because love is exhausting. Whenever you're in love, you can't think of anything else.
I know.
And you'll kill somebody for the person. I mean, you'll do crazy things, and you'll lie, and you won't be able to just enjoy going to see your mum or something. I mean, it's wonderful, but it's also exhausting.
Yeah, it sounds, and that's what I was thinking about too. I was like, after I said that last night, I was like, do I really want that right now? I was like, I don't. Like, yeah. I don't, for one, don't have time for it. And for two, I think it would just derail anything that I'm trying to do. And then I would be that just like, because I was doing that. I was dating a lot last year. And it was like, you know, I was, it becomes so much of the pie chart of your life.
Yeah.
Now, not so much, but yeah, that's fun.
That's why, like, I think, like, sometimes healthy relationships have this really nice dynamism where there's like, you're with the other person, but there's always a struggle. Now, if you haven't got a healthy struggle, you make it unhealthy. That's the big thing, is if you don't have healthy antagonism in your relationship, it becomes unhealthy. But if you have like a healthy antagonism, like together you want to accomplish something, or you're kind of like, there's like a distance at times or whatever, that can be actually productive of a really healthy relationship.
I was talking with my friends, the Mall Valley folk people. We went to a bank and we did some business things at a bank, which was really fun.
Yeah, it sounded very funny.
It was so funny. Yeah, just four assholes pretending to be adults. And so then when it's done, we're all excited and we go and we eat at a diner. And we start talking about like open relationships and that whole world and people, you know, like the Burning Man culture and that kind of like free love thing. And I was just like, it spilled out of me with like more intensity than it probably should have. But, you know, I was just like, not in a million years. I was like, I couldn't do it. Like it's one of those things where it's like, if it works for people, awesome. And like, absolutely whatever works for you, all that stuff, go with God. But like me personally, I'm like, the limitations that are on me, perhaps as a result of over proximity. I mean, I certainly was not wanting for love in my childhood. And so it's like, maybe as a result of that, the idea of like this sort of, I don't know if it would be connected at all, but at any rate, the idea of a partner or me having sort of like I'm just going to go, you know, do that. I'm like, that is like such a, and it doesn't feel good. It's absolutely like a jealousy thing, but I would rather maintain that jealousy and not let it go. And I feel like, is that bad? Is that like me being like, cause you know, you always want like enlightenment, you want to grow as a person, but I'm like, no, I'm good there. Like if that's the, like, I don't know if that's like some weird version of like hippie ignorance or it's, I don't know what it is, but I'm not where that is. And I think part of it is I like the idea of lack and I like the idea of it sucking a little bit.
Yes.
Because
yeah. Well, this isn't the reason why most people do polyamory at all, but some of the inspiration for polyamory is because monogamy doesn't work, right? It's so much failure and damage. But with someone like Lacan, the idea is you'll never find a configuration that does work. So if you're doing anything because you think, oh, this will make me whole and complete, oh, this, I'll go out with three people or we'll have this open relationship. If you're doing it because you think that will fix the problems that are in monogamy, you'll find it will just create new problems. But then the option is, if nothing works, then you've got to find a way of making that enjoyable. Yeah. And that's the trick. And I think you can do that in various relationship scenarios. The only problem is if you think monogamy will work, or polyamory or singlehood, if you think those will kind of like take away the difficulties of desire, we'll find that they don't.
Yeah, so what you like gotta, everyone's looking for the perfect like fit and the perfect like, you know, everyone wants to crack some code.
The silver bullet, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like the idea is like, I like the idea of just being like, okay, well, whatever it is going to be messy and imperfect. And if that is, you know, involves an affair, if it involves an attraction to another person, you know, you figure it out, you talk about it, or you don't talk about it. You work it out and you just like patch together this stuff, because it's like somewhere along the line, I guess maybe through movies or TV or something, we got in our heads that like, that life should go a certain way and you should like, and maybe it's like the whole, you go to college and you get a job and you get a family and you have a kid and then you retire. And it's like, there's this path that's set out before everybody, And I think that bleeds over into the process of love. And it's like, well, it can't be. Like, if you just do, like, if you look at anything else in the universe, it's messy. And it's like, and there's progress and there's like sparks of like goodness and all that stuff. But it's like the world and everything around us indicates that chaos reigns supreme. And yet we can still push forward through the chaos. And I feel like that's a better way of looking at it than like, well, polyamory is this and monogamy is that. But I know personally, with me, that's not, you know.
But this, the reason why I started this off with kind of talking about pleasure and enjoyment is because if you understand that, you go, okay, hold on a second then. Like, if you have pure enjoyment, as in, you know, you never get what you want, but you always want it, well, that's depression. So depression is never getting what you want. You're depressed because you never get what you'd like. But then melancholy is getting what you want and no longer enjoying it.
When you say depression, you don't mean the clinical effect. Yeah. You mean like the term used in...
Yeah, well, more structurally, like at a kind of, deeper kind of like philosophical level, you could define depression as a form of you've got the object cause of desire, but you don't have the object of desire. Yeah. So that's painful. So Schopenhauer, the philosopher, he says human beings, we oscillate between boredom and suffering. So suffering is not getting what you want and boredom is getting what you want. But then if you understand that actually there is enjoyment and not getting what you want, then what people can do is they can realize that and use it to their advantage. So for example, a couple that fight all the time, right? They're always fighting, very passionate, always arguing. You go, why are they arguing? Why do they not just break up? Or, you know, why do they not just find someone else? Say it's a couple who would be able to do that. You go, okay, right. They're not getting any pleasure because they're fighting and they're unhappy, but they are getting some enjoyment. There's some reason why they're doing it. They're getting something out of it. And if you can bring that to your consciousness and you can begin to work through it, you can use that to your advantage and go, you know what, we're a passionate couple. We do have fights and arguments, but somehow you make it a positive thing.
Yeah, you just work through it. You figure it out.
You don't work through it. No, I don't even mean it. You just, you kind of like make it a positive. You kind of enjoy that you're in a very passionate thing.
Yeah, work through it implies that you're going to get through it and it's going to be done and you're never going to do it again.
Because that would be favoring pleasure over enjoyment. But what the couple has to do is they have to find a way of going, pleasure is important, but so is enjoyment. Can I use one example?
And please.
It's a good example. It's sports. Because sports is perfect for it. I don't like sports because I don't get the genius of it. Mm-hmm. So sports never ends, right? American football, no one ever wins, right? No one ever wins the football. It just goes on forever and ever.
Forever and ever.
Every 4 years there's a fucking Super Bowl or whatever.
Yeah, they have them every year, but yeah.
Is that right? Well, it's whatever. And nobody wins. People win games.
And that's just in basketball.
Yeah. But I mean, if I was in charge, there'd be a super, super bowl. And then someone would win American football. And
football
then
would be over.
Over. It would be finished. And then you'd invent another sport. Yeah. And then you'd do it. And then it would be over. But here's the clever thing about sport and why it works, is it understands that you need pleasure and enjoyment. So the pleasure is when your team wins, and that's fleeting, and that's good. But the enjoyment is being with your team when they're not winning, when they're struggling, whenever the manager's changing, whenever all of that, where you know the stories of the team members and you're with them through thick and thin.
Those are the real sports fans.
Yes, and that's where the real satisfaction is. So in sports, as a good analogy, is there is a good mix of pleasure and enjoyment. Now, if your team always loses, you'll eventually lose the pleasure. But if your team always wins, you'll eventually lose the enjoyment.
Yeah.
So what, and this is how sports are designed. I think probably wrestling's like this. They're designed to make sure that nobody continues to win. And like sometimes that happens and then it destroys the game.
Oh yeah. And wrestling is very overt about like the story and very kind of like they have fun with it. I think if anything, wrestling is oddly transparent, and they're like, everyone is, you, if you say you enjoy wrestling, then obviously people are like, yeah, you know, it's for a fake, right? But a good friend of mine loves it, and then that's, you know, he gets annoyed by that thing, but it's like, because wrestling is pretty self-aware, like they know what they're doing and they know that they're entertaining, and
whereas, and you see that play between enjoyment and pleasure.
Football overtly. Not so much. People are like, and in like the term in a lot of sports is the fair weather fan, where it's like, oh, you're only a fan when they're winning, but you're not a fan a fair weather fan is a fan who only likes it when things are going good. And I'm like, first of all, that's very nice of you to imply that I'm a fan at all. Yeah. Like I'm doing this for entertainment. The closest I get to being a real sports fan is my college football team, and they aren't good right now. So I don't watch it all the time because I don't want to watch my boys lose.
Yeah.
But I still have a, you know,
but here's the funny thing. If they were winning all the time, you wouldn't consciously think this, but at an unconscious level, if they won 20 times in a row, if you saw them lose, something in you would be happy.
Oh, absolutely.
Not because they lost, but because enjoyment can come back into the picture. Mm-hmm. Because 20 wins in a row
basically
gets rid of enjoyment. So that's for me with wishes. To understand that a wish involves both pleasure and enjoyment.
So well, let's segue here because yeah. I want to talk about wine.
Yes.
This podcast is brought to everyone. The Fundamentalists is brought to you by trywink.com/fundamentalists. And if you go there, you can get $25 off your first order, which is enough for almost two bottles of wine, but at least one really nice one. And we are currently drinking wine from Trywink.
It's very good.
Dude, isn't it so good?
And I'm not even lying.
I know. I may have said this on the first podcast. They are my favorite company that I've ever done anything with. And but we did a thing. I did the classic mistake last week where I went into host mode and I did the thing that everyone says on every podcast because it's the only way that they can podcasts are so simple. And so people try to like make it seem like, well, we're going to get better equipment. And I totally said that.
We're going to get better equipment.
Yeah. And it's for sure. Maybe we will.
We're going to buy more wine.
What we're going to do, guys, if you sign up for trywink.com/fundamentalists is we will maybe get more wine and we'll do more podcasts. Maybe have some pizza.
And we'll maybe get a better Zoom.
Yeah, a better Zoom, because what we would do probably is get a Zoom that has more outlets on it so that we can, and some more mics so we can have some guests.
Did you get that on Craigslist?
I didn't get it on Craigslist.
Yeah.
But this
it's good. It's very good.
This podcast is brought to you by Craigslist.com/trywink.com/. But anyway, it's a wine company and you can get wine to your place and they're fantastic. It sends you a little thing. You can look up the like palette profiles and all that fun stuff. And
I just want to look at the one we're drinking. Yeah,
it's called Diviner.
I would recommend it. It's
Cabernet tasty. Sauvignon.
Yeah.
And it's really good. It's not out of a box. Yeah. I mean, unless they have it in a box and they just take the bottle and pour it from the box into the bottle, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever they do.
Very good.
Yeah. But check it out if you guys like wine but you don't know what kind of wine you like, because they'll give you a little quiz. But anyway, that's it. I don't like doing the rambling on about it, but they are really nice. So that's the end of the tangent there. Let's get back into
the meat of it.
Let's talk about current situations. So I totally get the pleasure and enjoyment thing. It's real fun. Right now, what are some wishes that you have that you think would go really well? And then I'm going to try to dissect them and tell you exactly why it's not going to go as good as you think it is. And as your life is only as good as it's going to get right now.
Okay, I'm going to have to think. Okay, I'll give you this one. This is the first thing that came to mind. This is like a free association.
Rorschach test,
becoming a comedian.
That's a really nice one.
And you'll know, so I'm going like, if I became a comedian, that would be really cool.
Although
to be honest, I know it wouldn't be.
It'd be supernatural.
Yes.
Supernatural event. I'd be like, oh, maybe, all right, I'm going back to church. that makes sense because you enjoy, well, for one, you love comedy.
Yeah, I enjoy watching you guys do your thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also do comedy when you do your talks, like have jokes and stuff.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. Anytime you want to do it, you should do it.
I know, but this is the funny thing. Maybe I don't do it because I prefer the enjoyment of the imagination. Like the actual going to the stage and going on and doing these open mics and doing all that actually wouldn't be much fun. But the enjoyment of thinking it is what I like more.
Here's what you should do. You should go halfway and become a heckler.
Oh,
People love that.
People love hecklers. Yeah. I've heard that.
And hecklers are cool because they think that
they're funny.
They're funny. Yeah. And they think they're adding to the show when in actuality they should be, they should go away forever.
Yeah.
Okay, I got a text message. I got distracted. So that sentence fell off a little bit. That's a good one. That's a very good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about you?
Well, I feel like we should unpack this.
Let's unpack it.
I think that what would happen is if you become a comedian rather than a philosopher, career turn.
Well, no, I know I like philosophy too much.
But be able to do it. Be able to do stand-up comedy specifically.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with
you,
whenever as we, yeah, I knew it's also your wish to be funny, to dream. But when I think about it, I go, to be honest, it's not much of a wish because I don't enjoy it that much, but I go like, it would be fun. It would be fun to be able to get on stage and just, instead of making points, because my whole thing is I get on stage and I make an argument, but it's just to get on stage purely with the aim of helping people have a good time.
Isn't that great? Yeah. It's such a beautiful thing. I even fall into that. I fall into, because I can be too heady on a lot of my stuff, and I can fall into like making a point and like I got something to say. And I'm now getting to a place where like it's taken 4 or 5 years, but I'm starting to speak from like the heart and the gut rather than speak from this like, here's mine, like my quick one-liner about, you know, my past. It's like I have the line where I go, I don't know what my ethnicity is. When I was a kid, I asked my dad and he said, I don't know, Republican. And that's just a nice tight one-liner. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh, everybody knows like the kid who grew up in a house that was political or a house that was more conservative and blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, that's fun, but it's a one-liner that I was like, well, I'm just brushing right over it. And then I'm like, well, why not like unpack that a little bit and then talk later about in the hour after I preface it. So I tell the audience with that, you know, I kind of hint to them what my upbringing was, and then later be like, you know, actually open up about what that's like and what it's like to exist in being from the South and then being, you know, into all this stuff, philosophy and all that, like self-growth type stuff. And so like, and then also being liberal, but also having conservative tendency. And like, that's, I think, a more interesting stand-up approach and a more difficult and more vulnerable stand-up approach than being like sort of Republican, even though I do like the joke. I'll keep the joke, but
no, I mean, my favorite comedy is when I see a comedian who is funny but also either autobiographical or making a political point or a philosophical point. I don't mean getting on a soapbox, but I mean that I come away thinking as well as laughing, or I come away connecting with something in myself because I've heard your autobiographical story, so it kind of connects me with myself. I love that kind of comedy, and I think that's a step up. That's a next level shit.
That's what I think. That's where I get very into like just the absolute reverence toward stand up, like as an art form, because it's such a. I don't think there's anything like it. Like at that level when you can get there, and my experience has been like, it's like I can still get on a soapbox, but I don't think it's as tall as it was before my life changed drastically. And it's the classic thing when it's like, when you're young, you think you know everything, and so you have this kind of like cynicism. And then it's like, as in my 30s now, it's like, but tiny, you know, small 30s, it's like I'm becoming less and less that preachy kid and more like the, hey, I heard a da, da, da. But in order to do that, I think it's next, because I was thinking about this last night when we were hanging out, and I was like thinking about my approach to where I want to go in comedy. And I was like, I want to be able to speak from the gut. I'm like, but what do I really want? Like, what is my actual philosophy? And I was like, I think it might be that I really love people, and I don't think about that. Like, I've never, because I can be very, you know, self-involved at times and in my head and doing stand-up alone, I think about it as me alone. But then I'm like, no, I think if I were to really start, you know, pivoting a little bit, it would be something like, it would convey a joy of people in some weird kind of cynical way, even though I never would have like previously thought that.
Yeah.
But maybe that was just a result of the cigar or something like that. I don't know. No. Anyway, I think you should do some stand-up, and I can get you on a show and it'll be great.
Very cool. And you know, I think this is why we're doing this podcast, because in one sense, I do talks which use comedy, but you do comedy which is also as a vehicle to explore ideas, and you know they're both coming from different sides, but you know, it's trying fun. To meet somewhere in the middle.
That's exactly what we're trying to do, trying to merge that a little bit with alcohol and two candles. That's good. In terms of my current wishes, I mean, there's the falling in love one is the most obvious one, but really it's just being able to create a very well-structured, busy life for myself in this next couple years, which seems to be happening. But it's that's the wish, just the sort of stability, I think.
Yeah.
And the ability to be like, cause it's just been a stressful few years. So I'd like to be able to like exhale and then start getting to work on things a lot.
So here's another thing to throw into the mix then. We're talking about wishes. You've said your wish, I'm my wish. Here's, and you know, we've talked about pleasure and enjoyment. Another thing to throw into it is, to what extent do we really know our wishes? So I, you know, the way there's always this idea, and I don't know where it came from, but the story of someone who finds a lamp and they rub it and a genie comes out and says, I'm going to grant you three wishes. And I've often thought, well, what if the genie really granted you three wishes, but not your conscious wishes? They granted your deepest desires that you're not even conscious of yourself. It could end up with the destruction of the world. The
genie's a dick.
Yeah, because like, that's the funny thing about this is that sometimes
or
you can wish
or a dick s. You don't know the
yes, that's right.
The sex of the genie.
Yes, dick s.
I don't think I've ever seen a female genie. Well, yeah, I dream of genie. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, but the idea that like you can, that's why in psychoanalysis people often, they discover that they, for example, hate their brother or their sister, but they didn't know it. They kind of hid it, but their secret wish comes out in a dream where they see their sister die.
Yeah.
So in some ways, I think life is not about so much having wishes, but sometimes it's more about discovering what your wishes are, confronting your wishes, and then kind of working through them, sometimes getting rid of them, realizing that we have wishes that are actually deeply destructive to us. Like people can wish for their own destruction. They don't know it, but whenever you look at how they live their life and they self-sabotage all the time, it's like, oh my goodness, I think this person, you know, without even knowing it themselves, they wish for their own failure in their career.
The book I'm reading now is about like the actions indicating the behavior, but it's not said so elegantly as that. But it's like you look at people's lives and you're like, if you just look at what they do, it is so far removed from what they say they want. It's like, and then that's as simple as like somebody who doesn't exercise but would wishes so much that they had a body that was like incredible. And then they see people who like look good or they get fit and they're like, what's your secret? Like, what did you do? And they're like, it's the same two things it's been for thousands of years. It's like, you don't eat like crap and you exercise. And then that's it. That's literally all it is. And then you look at their action and you're like, oh, well, they feel like they deserve this. But then they end up not actually. And you're like, oh, that person doesn't really want to look that way. Yeah. Like,
and they potentially don't, for a very good reason. Like, so it could be a protest against, not you don't even know this, but maybe your mom and dad were always kind of communicating to you that being thin was good.
Yeah.
And so even though you're trying to get thin, you're also, there's a part of you that's protesting against that. So actually, until you realize that maybe you're not able to get fit, because actually deep down you're protesting against something which is very good. You should be protesting against your parents, you know, if they thought that you should look a certain way. But you work through that and then you're more able to, you know, to, if you want, get fit.
What if the genie pops out and you're like, this is good, this is so exciting. And then you're like, he's like, you got three wishes, but they're your unconscious wishes, which is like finding out,
Brother's dead, all your friends are less successful.
And the last one, he just pulls out a gun and shoots you in the head.
Yes, that's it. That's right.
And that's the end of your life. Like, oh, how did he die? Well, the genie prompted out, granted his unconscious wishes. He was, you know, wanted to return to the dark abyss and then therefore did.
Well, yeah, there's a great quote by Gore Vidal. He says, every time a friend succeeds, a part of me dies.
I know. You said that when the Valley Folk thing popped. I don't know if you tweeted it or texted it or something.
Really I did. And I love that because there is a thing that we often don't admit to ourselves. But like if you're, you know, not doing that well in your life and suddenly you see your friends doing really well.
Oh, I admit to it day one. I'm like, argh.
Yeah, you go, oh yeah. But like a lot of us, we hide that. We go like, and we even hide it from ourselves. But our secret wish would be all my friends are just a little bit less successful.
Yeah.
You know, but you would never have that as a conscious wish.
Yeah.
You know, because
I just
want
to
be
the best and on top and rich and famous.
I want all my friends to be equally successful. In fact, I want my friends to be more successful than me. Whereas the genie says, no.
No, I would like to. Here's what you're going to get: fame and riches. Oh, crap. All right, fine. Yeah. That's like that, what's that, Brendan Fraser movie where you got, it's like, he gets I don't remember. I think it's like Bedazzled or something like that. It's not Bedazzled, but it's basically he gets he makes a deal with the devil and all of his wishes are granted, but they're all dark and it's all like,
oh yeah,
it's all stuff. He wants to be rich and she makes him into like a drug lord in Colombia and there he's about to get busted, but he's got this beautiful mansion and all these things. So yeah. It's like a classic story.
Oh yeah. And my that's favorite, but yeah. Oh no, but I think it's the same. And my favorite episode of the Twilight Zone was in like 1939. It's an episode called Nice Place to Visit. And it's about this guy who's a low-life criminal and he gets shot by the police when he's robbing a jewelry store. He wakes up and the guy in a white suit is there saying, oh, you know, I'm here to help you. And everything's exactly the same. And he's looking around, he's wondering why he's not dead. And he says to the guy, give me all your money, points a gun at him. And the guy in the white suit says, of course you can have all my money. Here's my wallet, but here, let me get you even more. In fact, I've got a beautiful house for you. And as the Twilight Zone continues, you realize he's getting everything he wants. And he's like, oh my goodness, this is the afterlife. And of course he thinks he's in heaven, but after about 3 months of getting everything, and he's always winning at the casino, like every time he gambles, he wins, and he starts to go crazy. And he eventually calls the guy up in the white suit and says, I need to get out of here, I'm going crazy. He says, every time I go to the gamblers, I win. And so Pip, and the guy in the suit, says, well, what percentage of times would you like to lose? And he's like, no, that's not the point. I don't want to be in heaven. And of course, Pip says, who ever thought you were in heaven?
Yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
is hell. Cool.
Love it.
But the way it works is that's all pleasure with no enjoyment. So that's, yeah. again, this really interesting trick of how do you combine pleasure and enjoyment.
There's a new comedy special by Tom Segura, who is one of my favorite comedians, and it's called Disgraceful. And if you're listening, I wouldn't watch it with children, and it's definitely incredibly...
Disgraceful.
It's disgraceful, yes. he definitely goes dark. But he has a bit about, like, it's like diseases aren't funny, but some of them are. And one of the ones that he mentions was the condition where people are orgasming all the time. And he's like, they can't hold jobs. He's like, because they can't know what he wants to get, you know, how much does this cost? And then like, he does like the thing and you're like, oh, of course not. And then you think, and he just like breaks it down basically, but it's all about these poor people who are experiencing orgasms all the time are in living hell.
Yeah, like, that's a great example.
And that's constant pleasure. And
with no enjoyment.
And they can't, you know, have actual lives.
Because that's what sex and foreplay is. Sex is the pleasure, the foreplay is the enjoyment. And in a sense, there sometimes we can get so caught up in foreplay, which is all enjoyment and no pleasure, which is its own...
I like to think of it as a Venn diagram, but okay.
Yeah. But which is kind of technically a perverse structure. Or you just have sex, but without foreplay, and then the pleasure is like so unfulfilling.
You know, all of this stuff, all of this talk of, you know, you get your wish, it's not what you want, but what you wanted was to not have it in the first place, and that gives you satisfaction and propels you to the next one. You know, all this stuff is solved very easily.
Uh-huh.
It's called cocaine.
Ah.
I think that's why cocaine is so popular in Los Angeles and why so many successful people do cocaine, because cocaine is something that gives you that sense of like, oh, I'm still on top. I got it. I'm best. I understand. And it doesn't, I think that's, there's something there. Cocaine.
And if you go to cocaine.com/the fundamentalists, you'll get $20 off your first.
It's just fundamentalists.
Just know fundamentalists. Yeah. $20 off your first shipment.
Well, and they ask you, like, do you like sugar? Do you like flour? And then they send you, you know, do you like confectioner sugar? I think that's what it is, though, because I was talking to some friends, and like the cocaine, especially it's the same in comedy, out here, it's so prevalent. And it's become kind of ubiquitous. Like people just are, it's a very normal thing to do. And there's a lot of people who think it should be legalized, and I don't, you know, have a dog in that fight, but like the closest that I've experienced is, that I'll talk about on the podcast is, I was in Vegas, which is a place of absolute pleasure and absolute fun. And I love it
But absolute enjoyment, because you lose so much. That's absolutely where the enjoyment is. So that's why it works even in a terrible way.
Even the act of being in Vegas is the pleasurable part of the enjoyment of me wanting to go back, because I know I love Vegas. So I'm always like, oh yeah, when are we going to, we're going to go back. Okay, cool. Cause I love it. And I love the crappiness of it. And I love how just terrible it is. Like I love the fakeness I think it's hilarious, and I always have a great time. And I was there at a bachelorette party. I was there.
That's a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means, but that's what you would have preferred to be.
I view my friends as chicks. And so I took an Adderall, which is like the closest, I guess, you could come. And I'd never done that before. And it was, and they were like, a buddy of mine, I had never heard this. And he was like, it's like synthesized cocaine. And I was like, okay, great. And so I took it and I nailed blackjack. I sat there at the table. I loved every second of it. I felt amazing. I was having conversations with people that were going, and like, I was like, this is so much fun. I was like, we're getting so much done. We're even in this conversation, we're making so much progress. This is so real and so like beautiful. And it made everything more, you know, brighter. I had no appetite. I was able to focus on everything. And I would sit there and I would just like a machine play blackjack, which I understand the rules. And once you know the rules of blackjack, it's kind of takes the, you know, brain power out of it anyway. And it was amazing. And then I went, everybody left and we didn't stay out that late and everyone went to sleep. And I just sat on a couch for 8 hours all night, unable to sleep, waiting for the sun to come up. And then watched the sun rise by myself, wearing like my suit from the night before, just peacefully sitting there. And I was like, this is a wonderful like experience that I'm having at this bachelor party, which I of course do not recommend, and definitely be, you know, please don't take anything I'm saying here as,
well, if you did that regularly, that would become hell. That's the
it
the
does thing. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's, yeah, like, and then, you know, that's, and then you get cocaine addicts and then you get all that and they're constantly seeking that, all that stuff. So
I mean, this is beautifully summed up, and this is a good place to kind of like sew it up, maybe. It was Freud who kind of said this in the most succinct way, where he said there is the pleasure principle. And what he meant by that is,
this is the pleasure vice principle.
What's
and
that?
Then there's the pleasure vice principle, and the pleasure vice principle. That's not, nope. There's no full joke there.
It's going nowhere.
Yeah. Then there's the pleasure secretary, and then there's the pleasure treasurer. All right. Yeah.
So pleasure principle is like what you want: climb trees, eat chocolate, whatever. And then reality principle is whatever stops you from getting it. And he says, what we think is, we think that the reality principle, which is, you know, a kid wants to climb a tree, but their body won't let them. They're not strong enough. So that's the reality principle. And so we fantasize that if we could get rid of the reality principle and just have the pleasure principle, life would be wonderful. But Freud says, no. It's the reality principle that makes the pleasure principle work. Yeah. So, and that's the trick. The trick is, yes, there's pleasure in life and getting things, but it kind of comes from the struggle, and those two are in this antagonistic back and forth. And if we think that if only we could get rid of the reality principle and eat all the chocolate we want to eat, climb all the trees you want to climb, win all the games that we play, that actually that would be disastrous. And you see this with people, some people who are very successful in LA, who literally almost have got rid of the reality principle, at least for a period, yeah, of time, where they get everything without reality impinging to a certain extent. And it's deeply melancholic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking about that with, I have a crush on somebody named Taylor Swift. She's a pop artist.
I've heard of her.
Yeah, she's indie, really good. And her music, she's very candid in her lyrics about being who she is and being rich and being kind of, you know, having pressures or whatever. And I've been listening to her album a lot. But I was thinking about what it would actually be like for somebody in that position to have that level of wherewithal and also fame and money, because it's like this girl is 28 or something like that, and she's been a celebrity her entire life. But she's still, I imagine, wanting to have a great time all the time. And I'm just using her as an example, but to anybody who's in that like super rich, famous bracket. And then she ends up, you know, she'll do songs about very kind of like one I listen to a lot right now, because I listen to a lot of pop music, is Look What You Made Me Do. It's This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. Oh. And it's all about like, you know, feeling so Gatsby for this whole year, and like, and I was like, imagine like you're rich and you did your album and you have all a year to just like travel and have every decadent thing that you want, and it's amazing. And then like what ended up happening, at least what it sounds like if you listen to her lyrics, is that somewhere along the line, one of her friends or Katy Perry pissed her off, and like that becomes the focal point of the song, and she makes a really, really good song out of that.
And you can feel the enjoyment. That's the thing. You can see that conflict is generating not just art, it's generating some sort of enjoyment, even if it's unconscious. So consciously she might be lacking pleasure, but it's actually, that probably enriches her life.
It has to, because it's like, what else could at that point?
Yes.
And she has this line at the end where she's like, she's doing like a, here's to my whatever. So she's like, here's to my baby who had to put up with all that. Here's to my mama who had to hear all that drama. And then at the end, she goes, here's to you, who the song is about, this person that she doesn't like and is angry with. And she goes, here's to you, because forgiveness is the best thing to do. And then before she gets through the line, she actually bursts out laughing and she says, I can't even say it with a straight face. And then it goes back into the chorus. And it's just like a fun, like, you know, F you pop song or whatever. But I'm like, well, why wouldn't, you know, in my mind, I'm like, forgiveness is the best thing, you should forgive. And then it's like, oh, she doesn't want to forgive. Like, I understand that feeling. Like, you want to be mad at the person, you get pleasure out of it, or enjoyment, whatever word, you know, I don't know which that would be. Probably pleasure, I guess.
Enjoyment. Enjoyment is the not getting.
Oh, because the pleasure would be them getting what they're owed. Yeah. The actual revenge.
That's a good example of it. Because and here's the thing, like, people have political leaders who they hate, so they get no pleasure out of them, but they get so much enjoyment out of them, but they don't know they're getting enjoyment. So you hate the leader, right? You hate them and you want to get rid of them, but you find yourself constantly listening to what they're saying and constantly, you know, interested in what they're doing in their private life.
But
it's unconscious, so you think you're not getting pleasure from that person, but you're getting enjoyment. And that's a negative thing, where you realize that you don't realize that you're actually needing your enemy.
Yeah.
You actually require the enemy.
And you're making them an enemy a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. In school, some people have to always have an enemy, because that's their only way of getting enjoyment, is to have somebody who they think, if I could get rid of them, then I'd be happy.
Yep.
But they actually need the person in order to get enjoyment.
I remember that happens a lot with me, or has happened in the past with bosses, like former bosses, and being like this, you know, did you hear what so-and-so said / did? And then it's like, looking back, I'm like, well, something in me needed that figure, or needed that person to be that figure, so that I could have this sense of like, so I know for a fact that's the cool thing about all this stuff, is like, as heady as it is, and is like, people, and I get a lot of crap for in my like circles, because I'm like, you're the only person who like is kind of, and there's some other people, but it's such a fun thing. But like, part of the reason I like it so much is, as intellectual as it can sound, because anything that begins with, well, you know, so-and-so said, it sounds very kind of like, you know, oh, what are you trying to, it can be turn people off, because there's like that, like, well, oh, you think just because so-and-so said that apply. But like, so much of
this
it
is, by the way, the only place in the world that I've discovered that.
Really?
It's weird, but in Los Angeles, there's incredible talent and brilliance, but there's not a big enjoyment of the academic.
No, not at all.
It's weird, because in Europe you can't quote all. In fact, it's an, you know, you're always talking about different thinkers, but and in other places in America, I think it's the same. But in LA, people don't like it.
I think it's a threat. I think there's the artist and the scientist, and the scientist, I think, would be closer to academic, would be closer to a scientist, and so the artist, I think, is self-conscious of the fact that they don't know that type of thing.
But
their brain doesn't work
because
that way.
I'm not jealous of someone who can play a guitar. I can't play a guitar to save my life. That's an incredible skill. But I'm not jealous. So yeah, it's a weird thing. But yeah.
I know in my friend, like, because I've thought about the same thing, where I'm like, when I bring up stuff, it can get kind of like slammed or like made mocked or whatever. And I'm like, something is going on where there's a insecurity, I guess. But it can also be me at times sounding more, you know, accidentally trying to sound smarter than I am. Anyway, we're talking about something.
Oh, yeah. Well, can I, because we were talking about the enjoyment, unconscious enjoyment from your enemy.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
a perfect example of this, I think, is fascism. So there was a guy, Wilhelm Reich, and he was a little bit insane, to be honest, but he wrote some very influential books in the early part of his life.
The Five Love Languages.
And he was a big figure in the free love movement.
Five love languages.
No, multiple love languages and love positions. Because he was all about orgasms. He created this thing called the Oregon Machine and stuff. He's quite interesting character.
Hold on, let's back up. Tell me about the Oregon machine.
Well, so supposedly it cures cancer. It takes the Oregon.
I'm willing to try it without having cancer.
Yeah. It's a box made up of organic material and inorganic material that supposedly focuses Oregon energy. He's very key in the New Age movement as well.
Oregon energy being like energy that happens during an orgasm?
Yes, but it's the energy that is everywhere at all times in all places. Cool. Yeah. Right. But orgasms are a particular explosion of Oregon energy. Anyway, that's not as good stuff. As good stuff is early on.
Called oxytocin?
Also called, yeah. But he early on had a theory, which I think is completely wrong, but it was very influential, which is that fascism is all about repression of libidinal energy. So fascists get you to repress your pleasure. But what happens then is that returns in violence and aggression. When you get people to repress their sexual energy, it comes up in negative ways, right? So the sexual revolution in the West Coast of America was about sexual revolution, which was political because they thought that would also get rid of fascism. But the really interesting thing about fascism is actually fascism is incredibly good at giving you enjoyment. If you look at Nazi uniforms, for example, they're basically fetish uniforms, right? You look at a lot of Nazi propaganda, it's full of enjoyment. And what you find on the right is that actually not only do people on the right, if you've got a leader who's a fascist, the people on the right, they like the leader, they get pleasure from the leader, they also get enjoyment because people are fighting the leader, they want to defend the leader. But then people on the left, they also get enjoyment from the fascist leader. They get enjoyment from hating them and despising them and giving them a cause. So what weirdly happens is fascism is incredibly good at basically anchoring us, and almost like a fish hook, putting a fish hook in our mouths and getting us addicted to the pleasure. And actually the real protest movement, we should talk about this sometime on the podcast, the real way to free ourselves is to free yourself from the libidinal enjoyment that one gets from fascism on all sides.
Yeah.
That's a truly revolutionary move, and it's very, very difficult to do because fascism is profoundly good at even giving enjoyment to its enemies.
So all these things are like real effective. Otherwise they would be not
otherwise they
everywhere.
Wouldn't happen. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Man, that's good stuff, dude. I like that a lot. Any final thoughts or final words? I think
Mike, I thought that was a good final thought. Now you want another one?
I know.
Like that's not good enough.
I guess final thought. That's not. What's your wish for like the next 6 days? That'll be our final thought.
Well,
something that's not.
I'll tell you what's on my mind is I'm really excited about this podcast, genuinely.
And me too, man.
My wish for the next week is, you know, that we'll record a couple more and we'll begin to develop this, and you know, really not just because we enjoy it personally, obviously, but that also there'll be a few people out there who'll get into it. We'll get better at what we're doing.
Yep, and that's the goal.
And yeah, so that would be wonderful.
Yeah, and if you're listening and you have feedback or something like that, please tweet at us or leave comments on our Instagram. Peter is at Peter Rollins and I'm at Elliot C. Morgan.
Tweet the bad stuff to Elliot and the good stuff to me.
Yeah, really switch things up. Finally, somebody would say something negative to me on the internet.
What would that be like?
That'd be great. But yeah, if you want to leave a review on iTunes, that helps a lot. And if you have any thoughts, please let us know. Any fun feedback, any additions.
Mine. What about you? What are your final thoughts on this whole conversation?
Oh, this whole, I like it a lot, man. It's all stuff like going back to, that was kind of the point I was making before. It's like all this stuff, what's fun about it to me is just, it's stuff that rings true in a way that doesn't feel like, for me, it doesn't feel like I'm learning things. It feels like I'm like,
edutainment.
Yes. It feels like I already knew so many of the things that people said more elegantly than I ever could say it. And it just is so nice to be able to be like, oh, that's like, I love the quotes and shit. Like, oh, I love all that. Like, I like the quotes and shit. I like the,
as Jung said, I like the quotes and shit.
He's really classic of his. I like the quotes and Elliot Morgan. I like the quotes and shit. I love all of it, man. I think it's such a nice thing because it's a way to put something in your brain that you can recall later that can actually literally help, or at least kind of like point toward a way to explain what's actually going on in yes. people's and your own life, which is cool.
Yeah, because I hope that you know, someone who is listening to this at least might go, oh yeah, you know, enjoyment and pleasure, that might be an interesting way of thinking about my relationship with my partner, that actually, you know, the struggles that we have are maybe actually a good thing or whatever. So there's something in this that is not just heady or not just a boring conversation, but also useful.
It always does. Yeah, it always does sound more optimistic than it does on the surface. Like, just yeah, as so optimistic. Much of the subject matter is like, well, this happens, and sometimes that can be what's really going on is X, Y, and Z. But ironically, or not ironically, fittingly, when we talk about these things that sound morose and sound dark, it's really not. Like, no. The feeling that I get from so much of it is like, oh my God, there is like actually, there's a way to do this life thing that does feel outside of, you know, the rote kind of bullcrap, and that's nice.
Yeah.
All right, cool. That's all I got. Bye, everybody.
Bye.